And now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
Ever noticed how time can be such a relative thing? Like, time flies when you're having fun. Contrast that with the interminably long nights of a camping trip gone wrong. Well, when I think about the fact that the Wild Side News is celebrating its third anniversary, I can see there's a lot that's going right in a world gone. We look to the future on this third anniversary of your Voice of the Earth here on the Wild Side News. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Welcome to the beginning of year 4 of the Wild Side News. It's been an amazing 3 years. That's over 150 shows with hundreds of guests. We've learned a lot along the way. From where I sit, in studio and in the field, and having a great opportunity to talk with some of the greatest people on Earth each week, it's obvious to me that a lot has changed very suddenly when it comes to nature and the environment. It's been interesting to be involved in talking about national parks and trails, public lands, our rivers and wilderness. We've watched as America's energy future morphs from business as usual with oil companies calling most of the shots to a world where the oil economy is like fashion from the 80s. We've watched China gain its legs and now its wings, and we notice, as it launches, the mighty talons of this newly evolved species. We finally come to realize that not all dreams do come true, that the fancies of our youth need revising. I've often felt that nations mature like the humans that define them. And in our case, we're passing from our teenage bravado into, hopefully, a more mature and adult persona. And, as with all maturing, it's going to be painful. But, if we do it right, we can look forward to great hope and a real future. It's up to us. Thank God somehow in these last 3 years, nature itself has moved from something to be pushed aside and trampled over in our quest for more oil and riches to a power of its own, which it has always had, but now seems to be finally saying, enough. And the challenges of creating a new world order will take the strong will of humanity around the world in a new definition of globalization that just may finally come to balance with the truth. Nature and we are one. So today we start with the news, and then to celebrate, we take a lighter path for today as we revisit one of my favorite segments from way back, and meet Hawk, a canine companion, and one of the most amazing stories of what we have available to us when we let the animals teach us. That's in segment 2. And in segment 3, speaking of learning from nature, it's that time of year when leaves start exploding on tree limbs, wildflowers take a shot at life and splendor from the forest floors. It's spring. Officially, and a great time to take a closer look at your world and learn how to draw the secrets of the beauty of form. Fifth in the series of nature drawing lessons on the Wild Side News, I'm amazed at how popular this series is to our listeners. If you've shied away before about drawing and exploring the nature and beauty of wonder through art and drawing and painting, shy away no more. It's time to learn the secrets to better nature drawing. That's coming up in segment 3. And following the news, I need some help. I, like so many of you, love to learn about the amazing ways in which our natural world really operates. Last week, we explored the depths of animal emotions with one of the world's leading ethologists. The study of animal behavior, trust me, is one of the most fascinating quests we humans can undertake. And in just a moment, I'm going to explain a theory I'm working on, and I need your help. I need a couple thousand field workers to listen carefully and report back. So following the news, I'm inviting you to help me determine if birds in the field are just out there proclaiming their territories and calling for mates, or are they in fact talking to one another? We'll find out, but first the news. The U.S. is finding its preeminence in the world challenged as the balance of power keeps shifting in a new world order. China, quickly emerging as the most significant challenger, is about ready to surpass the U.S. as the world's greatest emitter of CO2. With 35 developed nations signing on to the Kyoto Protocols to lower greenhouse gases, the absence of the world's two biggest producers of CO2 as signatories is becoming ever more untenable as the world tries to work together to address this critical issue. China is facing a future where it has to run to stay ahead of public demand for goods and progress, with meeting the energy demands to keep the factories growing. China just may face some unexpected bumps in the road to a consumerist, communist, capitalist model. And speaking of second place, this year's winter Arctic ice is the second smallest on record. A record set last year as the effects of global warming keep shrinking the ice shelf, which had served as a basis for a complex community of Arctic creatures which now must adapt or perish. Satellite imagery has dramatically recorded the loss of Arctic ice in recent years. Such is a most compelling factor in concluding that indeed, global warming is progressing. Scientists continue to make the case that global warming will be felt in many ways, some quite unpredictable. In a recent analysis of the coldest waters on Earth, which sink to the bottom in a super serum of salty ocean waters, the hastening of the melting of Antarctic ice is diluting the concentrations of salt in the supercooled waters, and this could affect the overall movements of ocean waters in ways that, quite frankly, no one can really predict. But, as with all things of a global warming nature, things just don't look the same as we head into the years ahead. A series of severe earthquakes are shaking up the South Pacific. A recent massive 8.1 Richter rumbler, which is about as big as one can get, destroyed thousands of homes in the Solomon Islands and set off fears throughout the region of a serious tsunami. 38 people have been reported dead, but the number is expected to rise as rescue workers from around the world begin the rescue efforts. This was followed in the last 2 days by a 6.1 quake in neighboring New Caledonia. Some people are noting that there seems to be an increase in activity in this region of late. Recovery efforts are underway. Speaking of recovery, a series of success stories in animal recovery are making the news regularly these days. With recent declarations of success with wolves, grizzlies, bison, new stories keep coming in. One of the greatest yet ongoing sagas of recovery involves the whooping crane, which began its difficult journey from near extinction with only 16 known birds in the 1940s to a whooping 216 birds in the wild today. Extraordinary measures, including the training of young whoopers to learn the migratory route between Florida and Wisconsin using ultralight planes to teach the young cranes the route, are subject to the whims and winds of the real world. Following a successful flight to Florida this past fall of 18 young birds, only one survived the severe storms that hit Florida this winter. Therefore, whooping crane advocates are watching the current migration of 60 cranes and paying particular attention to the one survivor to see if it will have learned the route back to Wisconsin, which this year it will have to fly without its ultralight companion. We'll be reporting on this story in the weeks ahead. And success is in the air, as the first condor egg has been spotted in a nest in the Sierra San Pedro de Martir National Park in Mexico. This is the first condor egg guarded by its natural parents in Mexico since the 1930s. Following a legendary struggle to keep the condor from extinction, small populations have been seeded in Mexico in 2002, and now the first sign of a possible recovery has been noted. Currently, about 100 condors fly free. And that's the news. A few reminders. As year four begins for the Wildside News, May 3rd will see the launch of one of the most significant worldwide forums that will air every week here on the Wildside News. The weekly Earth Summit will bring you a timely commentary by 10 of the world's leading environmental, conservation, and advocacy spokespeople, providing you with a true pulse of the planet as we craft a path to our future. We're excited to bring you the weekly Earth Summit. Plan on tuning in for the premiere Thursday, May 3rd, here on the Wildside News, and then tune in every week. Coming up in segments 2 and 3, you'll hear one of the most amazing stories of the bonds between human and animal as we explore the power of the canine companion, Hawk, who cares for David, who lost the ability to walk in a serious accident. And then pull out your pencils and get ready to learn the 5 secrets to better nature drawing in segment 3. But now, I need your help. I've spent years living with nature. At times, when I was really close and living amongst it, I can honestly sense that I was attuned. I've listened, looked, recorded, drawn, and wandered in the wonder and, as both a scientist and a romantic, tried to understand some of the deeper truths of the natural world. But I need your help. A few years back, I read an article by a researcher who suggested that the sounds we hear, created by the multitude of creatures, is not simply a jumble of competing chirps, tweets, chips, caws, and crackles. No, he suggested, and had some interesting research to back it up, that there was a relative steady state to the sounds of the wild, that in effect, animals took turns with their calls and cries. Now I began paying attention, and it's a bit of a challenge, but if you listen really carefully, I mean really carefully, and it takes a lot of work, you may pick up what I think I'm interpreting as a fairly complex sharing of the soundscape by animals that share a field or a forest and even your backyard. Let's hear an example.
Thank you.
Now, it's mostly birds that most of you'll hear, although chipmunks and ground squirrels and other locals will chime in. I remember in New Mexico that almost every evening, dogs seem to tell their stories in a series of barks, howls, yips, and songs. And I seem to remember that it was as if they were taking turns, sometimes intermixing their barks and howls, but it seemed that they most often took turns, sometimes in a very tight give and take. It's my belief that with the birds as well, there's often a very tightly integrated dynamic, where even intricate calls can be entangled, but if you listen carefully, the individual notes rarely are uttered at exactly the same time. One of the interesting things about this is that we hear these creatures all the time in almost every environment. So it can be an easy and enjoyable quest to add your observations to my theory. And I want you to do that and then report what you find to me. I need your discoveries. If it's true that birds and other animals somehow fit their language into much more of a community of calls, it changes, at least for me, my whole sense of what is happening in the wild. If it's true, it suggests that the communication of animals is much more conscious. Unless I'm fooling myself, it sounds to me as though different bird species know how to integrate their specific calls into the patterns of other birds, even of different species. Now, my observations would suggest that the species are familiar with the calls of their neighbors and can integrate their calls within those of their various neighbors. Please take the time to listen, I mean really listen, and send your thoughts to me at wildsidenews@cox.net. You certainly would find it helpful to walk out with a recorder of some sort so that you can analyze this back at home. I'm about ready to announce that I believe this is the way it is, and for me, it's a fascinating new awareness. But I'm a scientist, and I need more data. I need you to listen for me in your place. Let me know what you think and what you find out, and send them to me at wildsidenews@cox.net. That's wildsidenews@cox.net. When we get through with this one, I've got a great nationwide research project that I've been waiting 3 years to talk about. This radio research network holds the possibility of some startling ethological studies, which you can be part of. I'll play that clip once more. Take a closer listen. Okay, now, on your own, go out and help me find out if I'm right in this conversation of birds. But before you do that, stop what you're doing, take a moment, get ready to hear a story that says a lot about animal communication in a real-world application with real-world consequences. It's the story of Hawk coming up when your voice of the earth continues here on the Wild Side News.
Melting polar ice was a dirty look. Shrinking glaciers, a nudge. Then dying coral reefs pushed us, hard. Rising ocean temperatures and extreme weather, an uppercut. Then record-breaking heat waves hit us right where it hurts. Has it occurred to anyone that maybe the Earth is trying to get our attention?
We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. To find out how, go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Just how far can our connection go with the animal world? We love our pets, they entertain us, they are our friends, but perhaps we have only scratched the surface of what is possible. Today, we look at canine companions, dogs who give their lives in service to us. It's a story you will always remember, and you'll hear it here when we return on the Wild Side News. All of us who love nature here on the Wild Side News find our own special ways of connecting with it. Some take to the rivers, we head to the fields with our field guides and binoculars, we write, we paint. I've always loved animal communication. It's a wonderful science. It's actually the science of ethology. But today I want to explore the art of animal communication because it can reach a rather high form. The communication that exists between animal and human. And I believe we are about to take a journey that is real, rich, and wonderful. Today, I have as my guest a truly amazing guy, David Ball. David, welcome to the Wild Side News.
Thank you.
David, you have the opportunity to communicate with an animal that very few people will ever or could ever have. You have a friend called Hawk. Is he there with you now?
Yeah, he is. Hawk, you want to say hi? Speak to him. Hawk, speak. Speak. Say hi to everybody. Come on, say hi. There you go. Good boy.
That's great. That's Hawk, by the way. And now Hawk is with you everywhere you go, I guess. Let's get started. Tell us your story of how it is that you and Hawk have become so connected. Start at the beginning.
Well, back in 1989, I had a truck accident in which I broke my back and became a lower-level paraplegic. Got a side effect of a disease that's eaten away at my nerves, and over the years I'm able to do less and less. So I went to an event through a rehab hospital, and I saw a person with a service dog. I got to talking to them, and they put me in contact with Canine Companions for Independence out of Oceanside, California, and I applied and went through the application process and the interviews and got accepted, and ended up with a wonderful dog named Hawk here that helps me with everything in everyday life.
Well, we're going to talk a lot more about that in the time that we have here. It took you quite a long time to be able to get to Hawk. Talk about that, about the way in which the Canine Companions, there's a terrific need and actually a bit of a shortfall. Tell us about that a little bit.
Yes, well, I applied back in 2001. The application process took about 6 months, and then I was put on a waiting list. And I was told at the time that it could be as many as 5 years before I would get my service dog.
Wow.
I got lucky. For some reason, there was a cancellation. Somebody couldn't make the class, and they called me in. And Hawk happened to be there at the same time. It's a match made in heaven.
Well, I'll tell you, I was actually out at Canine Companions this last week here in outside of San Diego, and it's an amazing place. That is where you actually went through your training and met Hawk, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes. Let's talk about that training, because I tell you, people need to know about this. First of all, I'm just going to give a little background. Canine Companions raises special dogs. They actually have puppy raisers. And so all over the country, they have people who raise these dogs. This certainly is something that our listeners could participate in, and I highly encourage them to consider doing this because the need is so terrific. The puppies get special training. They have to learn 30 commands. And those that can pass that then move on to the facility. Let's talk about what happens then.
Well, at the facility, that's where the dogs, and I do stress that the dogs make the choice whether this is going to be the life they want or not. They get advanced training, learning how to work with wheelchairs, other medical devices, working around them, getting comfortable with them. They learn advanced commands such as turning light switches on and off, opening doors, picking items up off the floor, pulling people around in wheelchairs, a whole variety of things. And the dog has to make the choice. There's a lot of people that think, you know, the dog's going to make it when they turn them in for advanced training. But if the dog doesn't want to do this, it's not going to.
You know, you mentioned that actually what happens is once you get into the training, it's a two-week intensive. And from what I understand, it's a terrifically emotional, challenging time. Let's talk about that training because I was there during a training session, and that is precisely it. There's a lot of pressure. Tell us about that.
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of anticipation. You know, you go down there and you almost feel like a kid on the first day of school. You're introduced to all these new people and these wonderful dogs, and almost immediately they start working you with them, trying to find a match for you, the dog that'll bond with you the best and work with you the best. And of course, everybody picks their favorites, but you know, you, to quote another graduate's phrase, you kind of hold your breath until they make the permanent match, which is at the end of the first week. And we, you know, we work 6 days a week for 2 weeks with these dogs, and we go on outings, you know, to public places. We work with them there at the facility. The second week, they spend entirely with us, 24 hours a day, you know, part of the bonding process. And, you know, everybody picks their favorite dog, but the dog also has to pick the owner. And the trainers do a great job of matching them up. I mean, everybody that graduated in my class has got the perfect dog for them.
Well, you talked about the fact that you had a bit of anxiety and hope that Hawk and you, somehow it seems as if you connected from day one. It's almost like a romance. So there's a connection, a special magic. And I guess that day actually did come, and talk to us about that, when finally you and Hawk were officially partnered.
Oh, that was the highest point in my entire life. I've never felt so happy, so optimistic. I went from dealing with this disability and the things that come along with it to an optimistic view of what my future was going to be, what Hawk was, you know, going to do for me, the doors he was opening for me. It's indescribable. I mean, how well he makes you feel about yourself. All the dogs, everybody that got matched up, you know, it was, their matches made in heaven. They are like a romance.
You know, you talked about the fact that before Hawk, your life was much more isolated, and society reacted to you in actually sort of distasteful ways. Talk about what happened since Hawk has come into your life.
Yes, you know, beforehand, people, they tended, in my experience, and I'm not saying this is for everybody, but in my experience, people tended to shy away. They didn't want to talk with me. You know, I was on my own, so to speak. But ever since I've had Hawk, you know, people, they want to come up and talk. They want to find out about Hawk and what he does for me. They want to spend time. They want to see some of the stuff he can do. It's a whole new lifestyle. You know, it just pulls a person out of their shell real quick.
I found that to be the story amongst different people who have their dogs, that it's a totally life-changing experience. We have about 2 minutes left, David, and I'd love to hear some of the highlights of this, of what has happened. You only had your dog since, I think, February this year, is that correct?
Right.
Yeah. Talk to me about some of the miraculous things that have developed between you and Hawk.
Hawk's been there for me. I've had, you know, a couple bad weeks where I couldn't do anything just because of pain levels, and he would sit right there by my side. He's almost gotten to the point where he can anticipate my needs. Even when I'm, you know, physically down and unable to do much, you know, if I want to go to the refrigerator to get something out for supper, he knows that that's where I'm headed, and he opens that door for me. We get out and I'm getting tired or something, he moves just a little bit closer and positions himself so I can grab his harness, you know, like he's ready for me to pull, or for him to pull me. He's bonded with me much more than I ever thought was possible.
You know, I heard, most of the, actually, the commands are very direct, and you have to kind of guide the dog through a series of very specific commands to get them to do things. But I've also heard that that you and Hawk have had some special moments. For example, if you'd care to share the fact that at night sometimes you've had difficulties, and there was apparently a moment where Hawk seemed to instinctively know what your needs were. Could you talk about that? We only have about 30 seconds left.
Yeah, it started back in team training, actually, the first night he was with me. He figured out that at night, when I flip and flop at night, the pain is what keeps me up. I couldn't sleep much. So from the second night on, he gets on the bed with me. He positions his body in such a way to hold me in one position all night, comfortably. It's not uncomfortable. We're both real comfortable, but I can't turn over at night, and I sleep the whole night through now.
David, thank you so much. I wish we had 2 hours. Maybe we can do that sometime. I want people to go to Canine Companions. That's at cci.org. David, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Now go fetch a pencil and some paper. You're about to learn 5 of the most important secrets to better nature drawing. When your voice of the earth continues, here on the Wild Side News.
Catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm getting dying coral reefs.
A blue bicycle.
A walkie-talkie.
I'm getting a severe drought.
Cool black skateboard.
I'm getting melted ice caps.
A killer heat wave.
A shrinking glacier.
I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming. But it's not too late. We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
I don't care if you're a budding Da Vinci or a bungling beginner, there are some secrets to making good drawings. So grab a piece of paper and a pencil and get ready to have some fun as we explore some of the secrets of the master artists when your voice of the earth returns here on the Wild Side News. I've been pleasantly surprised to see that some of the most popular segments on the Wild Side News are those that help people learn how to draw and do field studies. I've already done 3 so far and have links to each of them on today's show page. I've introduced you to journaling and the thumbnail sketch. We've walked our way through field journaling and given you an introduction to drawing plants. I guarantee you, if you've put in a little time on those lessons, you've made some real progress. And no matter if you've taken the earlier classes or not, I'm about to give you 5 secrets to making better nature drawings. As usual, here's how this works. Because the show is streaming on the internet, you can easily pause any segment from your player. So what that does is let you listen to a new technique and practice it. And you can always go back and listen again. And when you're ready, just hit the play button and continue. It's best if you have some paper and a pencil or pen or whatever you like to work with. I'm kind of going on here so that those of you who don't have something available can get it. So let's have you get some supplies if you don't have them now. Okay, to best follow along, here's what you need to do. You'll need to click from the show page and go to the instruction page. Look on today's show page segment towards the bottom, click where it says to, and then get ready. I'll play a little music here while we get started. Okay, let's get started. You should be on the special art page which says 5 Secrets to Better Nature Drawing. You notice that it has writing on the left-hand side and then images on the right-hand side. We're going to go through these one at a time. And as I said, I recommend that you follow through. You can always pause the show as we go along and practice a little bit and then just hit the play button again to continue. And you can always drag the little cursor back a little bit if you want to repeat something. Or just listen to the whole thing or even print out the page. There's a lot of ways to approach this. Okay, are you ready? Here's secret one. And quite honestly, this isn't exactly a secret because this is one of the most important things that I stress all the time. Nature, all living things, are composed entirely of beautiful curves. So what I'd like you to do is look at the images there in segment A. And you'll notice, for example, the two little leaves, the green one and the red one. The green in this particular case represents a drawing that utilizes beautiful curves. The red indicates how a lot of people make sort of sketch things in. And it's okay. It's not that it's wrong to do it that way, and some people enjoy that. And if done actually right, it can have a really fresh and fun look. However, if you're trying to render properly the living earth, then you must learn to do and render beautiful curves, as you'd find in A. So some of you may wish to pause at this point and practice A. B is another example. This could be, for example, a blade of grass. And you'll notice that the green is composed of beautiful, long, elegant curves. Whereas the red, again, has more what an instructor used to call sketchy baloney lines. And that's a good term, actually. And it works, but if you're trying to render properly, you need to, again, render with the beautiful curves. I use it as an example of why this is important. See, I've drawn an eyeball there. And we all know that the eyeball is extremely sensitive to virtually any variation. And strangely enough, that's sort of how it works with our eyes when we look at art. The eye will go to the thing that's wrong. We're going to talk about that even more in Secret 2. So therefore, if you're drawing an eye, you really want to create beautiful, smooth curves, because otherwise it's irritating. Literally to look at an eye with irregularities is very off-putting. So in D, in segment A there, what I've done is just showing you some of the ways that you could just experiment with drawing long curves. When you're not doing something, or if you're busy actually working on your art, then just take and create long, elegant curves that are beautiful. You don't want to make them too awkward. You don't want them to change radically. You want them to be smooth. And then just to really make the point that in nature, all living things are composed of curves, and I also say there are no straight lines in a living world, I've drawn and provided two perfectly straight lines to show you how awkward they feel in the natural world. They just don't fit. So stay away from any straight lines when you're rendering the living world. You may wish to pause at this time and practice, or we continue. Secret 2. creates smooth and even shading. Here's a really important secret. The eye goes to the thing that's wrong, and there's a good reason for that. And that is that if the eye wasn't attracted to the thing that's wrong, probably none of us would be listening to this show right now. When we're living in the world, we can have millions of inputs at any particular second, and everything is okay, but let one little tiny thing go wrong, and we reflex and notice that. The same is true in art. Why is that important? When you do shading, and most people like to add some sort of color or shading, many, many, many people, as they're doing the shading, put it in kind of a random, you see a lot of lines and irregularities in the shading. And here's the problem with that, and that is that the eye is trying to figure out, is that an important detail? Is there a white area there? Is that supposed to be telling me something, or is it not? And the brain becomes obsessed with trying to figure out what all that stuff is, as opposed to reacting to the beautiful form and the beautiful fill that you do when you create a perfectly even shading. Now, the even shading is extremely easy to do. What it primarily means is that you do not change the pressure of the pencil that you're using to do the shading with. Just practice that. Just take the pencil and be sure that you keep an even pressure. And you'll find that the pencil can even stay in one place and it really isn't getting any darker. But as soon as you put more pressure on it, you're going to find that it creates a darker line. Or if you have less pressure, it's not going to be as dark. So the secret to even shading is to use an even pressure and just color in as carefully and evenly as possible. And what you end up with is beautiful forms with beautiful texture. And therefore you can see the art as opposed to the irregularities. So you may want to just practice that. You may want to just pause here again and try shading. This is something that is really easy to do, but it may take some practice. Some people may find it hard at first, but it's at some point you'll go, oh, I get it. It's like with anything in art, you simply have to practice to master the techniques. Now let's move on to secret 3. Creating illusions of depth. I'm going to read what is here. Light curves around objects. What that means is that when light actually hits something, by the nature of light and objects in space, the light curves. And what that does is it actually creates a little area of disturbance in the air around the object. You'll probably never notice it in reality. However, when it comes to drawing, it serves a very useful purpose. When we look at example A, if you were to try to identify which one of those crossing lines was in the front, it would be anyone's guess. You really couldn't tell. But when you look at example B, you'll notice that, for example, the line that is totally unbroken appears to be in front. The line that passes behind that with the little gaps moves right behind it, and that's just plain the way it works. So you don't have to be obsessive about this, but try to be at least conscious of it, that if you're trying to indicate depth with different objects overlapping one another, leave a little gap, a little area of white between the forward object and the object behind it. You can just draw some lines. Therefore, it's actually easiest if you draw the closest line first and then draw the next line in, leaving the gap, and keep on going backwards that way. It's really quite exciting to see the effectiveness of that technique or that secret. Again, you may wish to pause at this point and practice. So now we continue. This is secret number 4, changing values. To accentuate the varying depth of objects, always vary their values. Let's take a look at example A. What I've done here is I've drawn actually A and B. I've drawn essentially the same images, and in example A, in terms of the leaves, I've created the same value. That has to do with its darkness or lightness on all of the leaves. And you can see that if you had to try to tell someone which leaves are in front and which leaves are behind, you really couldn't do so. But here is the secret. And that is when you're trying to create this illusion of depth with objects in particular that cross over each other, change the values. Always change the values. And don't even worry too much if what you're looking at works that way. It doesn't really matter. Just change the values. For example, in B, as we look to the leaves to the right there, you'll notice that some of the leaves, which I happen to have put in very dark, tend to be way in the distance. And then the other leaves are on top of the distant leaves. And it's very, very obvious. It's primarily the same drawing that I did in A. I just varied the values. And that's a critical element of trying to move objects in space relative to one another. And it also helps to identify and clarify an object in space, because as its value is different than another object, it stands out and alone. Here's another aspect to that. This is like secret, sub-secret for A. And that is that when values become the same, that is, if it's very dark on top of very dark or very light on top of very light, they flatten. They just plain flatten. So dark on dark flattens. Light on light flattens. Therefore, if you have great contrast, it really creates a large distancing between the objects. And what's fun about that is the fact that you can, therefore, tend to actually move the objects as you're creating them in space by varying those values. If you wish one part of an element of your drawing to close in on an object that perhaps is behind it, make the values similar. And if they end up being the same, they'll literally melt into each other. It's a very interesting process, so you have to do a little bit of thinking ahead in order to accomplish this. This is one that you can have a lot of fun, particularly if you like to do sketches and shading with a pen and ink or pencil and colored pencil and things, because it works so effectively. You'll find that your drawings really take on a life when you utilize that technique. Now for our final secret, and this is a rather interesting one, and it's subtle, but very, very important. And that is the process. It's a technique of intermixing colors. Many artists who are starting out, when they're wanting to use color, they may have a 24 color colored pencil set or something, or they may be working with watercolors, or it could be with paints out of a tube. And what they do is they take those colors. Let's say it's a colored pencil, which in this case E. That's exactly what I used. And I chose three colors, a kind of a bluish green for the leaves, a yellow for the petals, and a magenta for the center of the flower. What a lot of artists do is they just take those and they use those colors and they create their images. The trouble with that is the fact that in many cases, those colors will appear scandalously inappropriate next to each other, and nature never does that. You never look at a flower and say, oh my gosh, that flower doesn't go with those leaves. They are always similarly enough related in color dynamics so that they get along. They rest with each other. And of course, that's because literally they're related genetically. And that's the important key. When you take colors straight out of a colored pencil box or paints or whatever, put them on the canvas, they may have no real relationship with one another. So what you need to do, just like you would, for example, in looking at a family and saying, gosh, they all kind of look alike, is intermix, in essence, the color genes. That's what I've done in the flower and leaves in example B. I colored it exactly the same as A to start out with. But then, for example, I took the yellow of the petals and I colored over the leaves with the yellow and intermixed that. Now we have a little bit of yellow with the green, and there now the genetic colors are mixing. As well, I took the magenta and did the same thing. I also very lightly mixed in colored in the magenta over the green, very, very lightly. And then I also took the green and went over the yellow leaves, petals, and as well the center dot of the of the flower, and I took the magenta. Excuse me, let's see, where am I at here? Anyways, I intermixed all the colors. Now, if you're working with watercolors, that's really very easy to do. You just take and you make sure to try to intermix just even the tiniest little bit of one color with the next. And what will happen is the fact that they will then be genetically related, and they tend to tone them together. And in that process, you actually accomplish two really powerful things. One is the fact that therefore, in that particular plant or flower, there are no scandalous colors. They actually are related to each other, and they sort of rest. It also accomplishes this, and that is that as you mix, for example, the green and the magenta in with the yellow, it starts to create a vibrancy, more life, more vitality of that color. It brings it to life. That's what vibrancy is. And it's caused by multiple colors creating the illusion of a single color. And the other thing is that when you do that, then you make all of the colors rest with one another. That's how nature works. So if you wish to create drawings and sketches and watercolors and paintings that really reflect the way that nature is, these are five secrets that just plain work. I'll review very quickly. One, everything in nature is composed of a beautiful curve. There are no straight lines in nature. If you're lost on a mountain or on a hillside, and you're truly lost, and you're trying to figure out how to get back to civilization, you stand up and you scan, and what you're looking for is a straight line, because that straight line will represent a house, a telephone pole, a fence, something human-made. Secret two, creates smooth and even shading, because the eye goes to the thing that's wrong. Secret three, creating illusions of depth. Light curves around objects and therefore distorts the air around that object. Therefore, leave very slight clear or white areas around an object in front, and it magically determines and helps the viewer understand the relationship of the objects. Secret number four, change the values. To accentuate the varying depths of objects, always vary their values. And then secret five, intermixing colors. In nature, there are no scandalous colors. So the secret is, always intermix the colors that go into making up a particular plant or flower. This would be the leaves, the petals, whatever it may be, because then that flower will have a genetic color relationship and appear much more natural. I encourage you all to participate in my ongoing art series. As a matter of fact, I'm going to be ramping up the art side of the Wild Side News in the weeks and months ahead here. I'm excited about that. And if you haven't had a chance to go through the three previous art lessons, this is a good time to do it, or at your convenience. So now, as summer starts ramping down, it's best to make the most of what's left. So I want each of you to take a long walk into a natural area soon. This weekend, for example, head on out to a favorite overlook and just listen. And take the time to let the magic of the mystery penetrate. And then we'll see what's up next week. Until then, this is Sidney Wildsmith saying adios. Until next Thursday or any time on the archives, when your voice of the earth returns here on the Wild Side News. Thank you.